6:30. Salute and pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can you be responsible, I think, for moving that around to people?
I might have to.
So, any public comment?
Yes, I have public comment.
Okay, so I have a couple of things. The first is that AB 332 was introduced into the assembly, and that is, was introduced to address the treated wood waste issue. It has a two-thirds urgency clause, so it'll go into effect as soon as the governor signs it. It's expected that it'll probably be about late summer to early fall, so we have at least an end in sight. That bill is intended to reestablish the alternative management standards for treated wood waste. In the meantime, the DTSC is still working on a short-term bridge variance solution, which is expected to go into effect sometime this month. That will allow us to apply for a variance to resume handling treated wood in the same manner than we, as we were before January 1st. So that's the first thing. The second is that SB 289 was also introduced, that's into the Senate. And this is an extended producer responsibility bill that would require manufacturers of all battery types and chemistries to fund a take-back program and recycling program. So this would, if it is adopted, it would significantly alleviate a huge burden off the agency, as right now, we manage an incredible amount of batteries for recycling.
What is the, what is it?
It's an all-battery extended producer responsibility bill. So it would basically, it would mean that the manufacturer of any battery type, you know, regardless of chemistry, would have to fund a program to take back and recycle the batteries.
Can you hear her okay?
Can you hear me?
Okay.
I wasn't sure when you were facing this way. Any other public comment? Okay, we'll move to regular items. First, we need a motion for approval of the minutes. And we'll move to a second motion to approve, a separate motion to approve the warrant registers.
I move we approve the minutes as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second.
Oh, we don't have a.
Yeah, we don't need to do the roll call.
Okay.
Because I can, yeah, I can hear y'all.
I'm sorry, I'm used to kind of doing it the other way.
Exactly.
We have a lot of abstentions, though, does that matter?
It is everyone who's abstaining needs to abstain, or at least not abstain, but vote to form.
Yeah.
So who was, whoever was.
Yeah, because the board's changed a lot since then, so.
I wasn't here, so I abstained.
The.
I abstained too, because I wasn't there.
The only ones present were Chris Diders.
So there's, you can vote as to form, approve as to form, but if everyone abstained who wasn't here, then we would never be able to pass the minutes.
Yeah, the minutes would never. Because people that were there are no longer on the board and no longer on the city council as well.
Chris would be the only one who'd be allowed to vote on it.
Exactly, and we'd never get it passed.
Oh, no, was I, yeah, I was here.
So yeah, two people, that's not enough.
Oh, yes, that's right, sorry. Yep.
So.
So Jim was.
I don't know.
Okay, so you got, yes?
Yes, okay, as to form.
Excellent.
Any motion on the warrant register?
I'll move the warrant register.
Both of them, or one of them?
Both warrants.
Perfect.
The grant funded and the regular.
I'll second.
Can you start to say all in favor?
Yep. And then all in favor.
You can do if there's any abstention.
Or any.
Yeah, I think you.
I didn't hear.
So So you want to call, is it all in favor? And then if there's yays, nays?
Yeah, I was thinking at one point we did it.
Yeah, that's the level we're doing.
All in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Any opposed?
It's just confusing because we're back and forth between the teleconference and.
Yeah, the roll call, when we're on the phone and we can't see you and stuff, but when we're in here, then it, yeah, we can hear everybody and get it all.
So we did both warrants, correct? We didn't do separate ones.
So that's it for the.
Regular agenda for landfill opening. I think Paul's going to talk about most of these items, so we'll just let him go through that.
That's what Rachel told me, yes. So we'll start off with the 1383 regulations review. So if you'll go, the one with the page numbers on it.
11.
Page 11 is where it starts, and there, thank you. Several documents that we have to go along. So there's the master one, that's the development timeline. That'll show you all the way through to 2027, which is the final date when we have to pretty much comply with all parts of the regulations. Nothing will be, we won't be exempt really from anything. But at that point, smaller population areas in the county, we can apply for waivers, and high elevation areas, we can apply for waivers. So certain parts of the county will not have to, the only thing they won't have to do is collect the food waste, but that'll be later on. Because we're a rural exempt county, once we pass the, I believe the ordinance stating such, then we won't have to implement a lot of the things starting 2022. But there are several things we're working on that will need to be implemented, such as obviously besides the ordinances, that sort of thing, resolutions, the edible food recovery portion of that, we have to comply with starting January 1, 2022. And the edible food requirement it's based on the generator size. So the first tier is going to be supermarkets, grocery stores, those types of large entities, and they're going to have to comply starting January 1. Essentially separate out all the food that is fit for human consumption, that can be given back to a food recovery organization, such as like a food bank. Those will have to start recovering that edible food January 1, 2022. Then the next tier two, which I believe are restaurants or schools, and some of the smaller generators will have to start recovering that edible food starting January 1, 2024. So currently we're in the process of establishing our tracking and reporting spreadsheets for how we're going to have to track all of these generators. And then also another component is investigating the generators to make sure that they're compliant with the regulations.
Are they required to separate the edible food? In
yeah.
other words, if you have, you know, some leftover vegetable stuff, and then something that could actually be eaten.
Yeah.
Must they then separate wheat from the chaff, as it were, or do they have that option of donating? Or is the donating required?
That's the donation is required for the large generators.
So
that's
going to
be the supermarkets, grocery stores initially, and then restaurants that are 250 plus seats or 5,000 square feet, either or. So there are some restaurants in Tama County that meet the square footage requirement, but not the seats. So they would have to separate that. It's not gonna be stuff that was on a plate, that was on somebody's table and then taken away that could be eaten. It's gonna be back of the house food at restaurants, grocery stores, you think of like prepacked sandwiches, different things like that. Those things that they can't sell by that sell-by date, then they would have, they're required to recover that. And they can't knowingly spoil it. So they can't do something to let it, you know, go to waste, essentially.
Isn't that going to be rather a burden on the markets? I mean, admittedly, some of the larger stores perhaps can work out something to afford it, but you start looking at some of the new way, save more. Isn't that going to really require a great deal of expense? It's one thing to just load it all somewhere, recycle it, whatever.
Yeah.
But to actually sit back there and process out, you know, this bin of lettuce, these, you know, radish leaves,
it's going to put a real financial burden on them, and other than, you know, maybe generating some more food giveaway sites, is there any kind of exemption to that, or size of the store?
Have to say that here in town, and we don't say which names, so we call them the Jesus Box, but the local grocery stores are already being really, really careful about making sure that food that can be eaten by someone else is given to someone else.
Definitely. Some of the large, like Safeway, Raley's, Food Max, your large grocery store supermarkets already have these things in place where they're recovering that stuff, but they may be backhauling it to Sacramento or somewhere, so it may not go local, but they're still, that would satisfy the requirement. The smaller ones, the Save More, the New Way, I still have to get the square footage on New Way. There's still some details, but it's grocery stores that are 10,000 square feet or larger have to then comply as well. But you know, there may be initial a learning curve where once the employees start getting in the habit. I worked at a grocery store myself in produce, and we implemented a recycling, organics recycling program there, whereas everything was going in the trash before, and then they brought us bins. It didn't take that long to get the hang of, you know, putting the right materials in those bins and not putting rubber bands and other things. The same with the edible food that could be recovered. I think, through training that we would, we could work with the grocery stores. The state, CalRecycle, is also going to be developing some training and education that we can get to them. So it's a easier, less burdensome process for them to just take that stuff, get it to an organization that can then give it to people that need it.
Is there somebody that comes in and monitors it from the state that says, and see if they're in compliance, or?
We would monitor that on the, and then we are ultimately responsible. The jurisdictions are responsible then for ensuring that they're doing everything right. And then there's, initially an education component, and then after 2 years, it turns into violations and fines and those types of things.
By the fines?
I'm sorry?
What are the fines?
To develop that, but...
The fines are in the regulation.
They define it as a certain amount. I could look that up for you if you'd like.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is going to put you in a pretty precarious situation.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Are you going to carry a badge or what?
I already got a badge.
Seriously?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about it.
I understand.
Yeah.
So I understand.
So I talked about this with this or Bill Goodwin and Rick Crabtree yesterday, and depending on the magnitude or what type of generator, whether or not that generator has a history of being aggressive or not, it would either some violations would probably ultimately be pushed off onto code enforcement or law enforcement. Like, we obviously aren't going to go in there as solid waste employees to deal with it. So as far as edible food recovery, that's very simple. These are businesses; they're reputable in the company and the county. And when it comes to monitoring residential generators out in, far reaches of the county, we're not really sure what's happening there. There's no way we're going to be doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at the extra work. And are you going to hire extra staff for that? Is that what you're going to do?
I hired him already. Yes. Uh-huh.
There's other requirements too that'll require additional staff to complete those sampling and stuff like that. But the fines, those wouldn't occur until January 1, 2024. The first 2 years from January 1, 22 till December 31st, 23, we're educating them. We're making sure that they don't do things that will create violations. But if they do after January 1, 2024, their first violation would be a penalty of $50 to $100. Second violation would be $100 to $200, and this is per violation, so it depends on the natures of the things that they're doing, if there's multiple violations. And then a third or subsequent violation then would be $250 up to $500. They are also say that there's nothing in there that would prevent a jurisdiction from revoking, suspending, or denying a permit, registration, license, or other authorization consistent with local requirements outside the scope of this chapter, in addition to the imposition of penalties.
Okay, let me ask you the ultimate question.
Yes.
If businesses with not complying with and violations continue, do you have the right to close them down?
I believe that's the language in there where they talk about denying permits. So I think that would be like your
business license,
and for restaurants, certain permits that they need to continue operations. Yeah. And those would be issued by the jurisdictions.
Yeah, not us.
Not by our agency, yeah. Or revoked by them.
I have one more, just very quick, brief question.
Yeah.
Given the litigious nature of everyone in the world, somebody keels over from a bad egg salad sandwich that they recovered or claimed to be, does that bill at all address liability?
Yes. There's already certain laws that have been passed years ago. The Good Samaritan law is one of them. California passed a subsequent law. I don't think I have that in the regulations here, but there are laws that protect generators, donation. If you're doing it in good faith, you know, you're not intentionally putting something bad on food to give to somebody because you don't like that they're, you know, out front of your business or whatnot, but you're you know, doing it in good faith, you're giving them food, you know, under the assumption that it's good quality food, they have to meet the food safety codes as well to be able to donate that. So there's already steps in place that restaurants, grocery stores already have to follow as far as the food safety goes, and that'll just be applied to the donations, and then those laws that are already in place would protect them from liability. So, in addition to investigating our edible food generators and our organic waste generators, once we have to comply with the recycling of organic waste, we also will have to investigate complaints and ensure that jurisdictions are meeting the procurement requirements. There's one procurement requirement that comes into effect January 1, 2022, and that is the recycled content paper requirement. Although, based off of what I've seen in regulations and the specific codes that they reference, if the recycled content paper is more expensive than the paper that you're currently buying, then you don't need to purchase that.
But you have to document.
We'll have to document, and that's another portion of that, is documenting all purchases by jurisdictions as far as paper goes. The next requirement...
that seems a little... I mean, trying to think of being a business owner here. You might want some higher quality paper for some project that you need. It sounds like it's a little restrictive. Is there guidance for, you know, special projects or something?
So, for example, you go to a local printing shop and you want a certain weight paper. Uh-huh. You say, I want this to recycle content. And they say, sure, it'll be, and this has happened to us because several of our grants require us to print our recycled content paper. So they come back and say, we can do that, but this, it's going to be 80% more expensive. At that point in time, you don't have to do it anymore. You can go with the cheaper option. Or they could just straight up and say, that quality paper at this weight and recycled content doesn't exist, we don't print on it, and so it's not even an option available to you. So the problem that is that every single time a department in each one of our member jurisdictions, that's the county and all the cities, makes a paper product purchase that's toilet paper, hand towels, copy paper, whatever, they have to document that they went through and did the research every single purchase, that the comparing recycled content to non-recycled content, to make sure that they were doing their due diligence to make sure that if they bought virgin paper, it was in fact cheaper or better quality for a reason. So you have to justify if you're not buying recycled content, and that's for every purchase we'll have to. And I think that's what Paul is kind of getting to, is that he's working on developing some kind of reporting portal for all of the jurisdictions to get this information to us, because we're going to be the hub, the information holder for the state, you know?
And this is a requirement only on jurisdictions, the city, the county, not the local businesses.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I don't believe, it doesn't state that it has to be 100% recycled content, which is what the agency uses, which is what all your agendas are printed on and everything is 100% recycled. It just says the minimum percentage needs to be indicated. So there are quite a few, 30% post-consumer content paper and stuff out there that's less expensive, obviously, than 100%. The other procurement requirement, and this will take effect at the later date of January 1, 2027, is the procurement of organic waste product. So that could be defined as purchasing compost, purchasing mulch if it meets certain standards, and other fuels that are made from like anaerobic digestion, where they convert the organic waste into natural gas, essentially. So that requirement, though, won't take effect, like I said, until 2027. We have a little time to get that all sorted. If a facility is built at the landfill that the agency then would operate or contract out for operations, all the material that is produced from that composting operations could go towards our procurement, and we wouldn't have to purchase compost then, as long as it meets the exact amounts that we're required to. And that's in the regulations, I believe it's 0.08 tons multiplied by the population.
Yeah, I think it comes out to about 40,000 cubic yards or something like that. I saw the calculation, unless it's changed. It's quite a large amount of compost you have to purchase.
Yeah. And we can...
if you're already using like shredding companies and things like that, aren't you... Is that recycling, correct? They're already recycling.
Typically, the shredding companies are going to take that material to a recycler, yes.
But that doesn't count towards your recycled procurement goal.
So. Yeah, that's just disposal. Mm-hmm. The procurement, they need us to purchase copy paper, basically.
Essentially,
that's recycled.
They're creating a market, is what they're doing.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So what I'm currently working on then is establishing the list of edible food generators, figuring out who's in that tier one, who's in that tier two, and then who all the other ones are that we don't have to focus on. And also a component of that is also creating the what they call the food recovery organization list. So that's your food banks, gleaners, whatnot. So we're working with the Community Food Alliance. They have a separate group that meets about food recovery organizations. So I requested to be added onto their meetings so that we can make those connections now with the food recovery organizations and then connect them with the edible food generators, so it's real easy for them to get that material to people that need it.
So Paul, the
yes.
Community Food Alliance is what they're called now, is to name it together.
Yes.
Group is working on becoming the Food Policy Council.
The Food Policy, okay, that may have been what Orly was talking about.
Yeah, but it is currently just a Community Food Alliance, but it probably is about a year away.
That's what he had, the Community Food Alliance, the team together had a great list that I had gotten from them, so that's a good starting point, and then finding if there's any others that are out there and what they're able to take as well is the other big thing, how much they're able to take. We need to figure out the capacity. If we don't have enough capacity, then each jurisdiction will have to figure out a way to get more capacity, so expanding freezer or refrigerated space, essentially, so that they could recover that food. So the main focus then this year is going to be outreach. We've already started an outreach campaign where we worked with our waste haulers, Waste Management, Waste Connections, and Shasta County as well to develop four press releases that we're putting out on a quarterly basis. We've already submitted the first one in January, and almost weekly Facebook posts that are going out that are talking about different things related to food waste, related to composting, just to get that message out there. People kind of then can see it, and then once we start implementing these things, hopefully it's you know, not that difficult then, we'll see. And also still waiting on a response from CalRecycle on clarifying questions for the regulations. As you can, this is the regulations printed double side. So there's a lot of regulation, a lot of stuff to go through, and CalRecycle is also putting out webinars and trainings over the next several months that will help us understand this better, and you know, what those requirements are of us.
Are you presenting this to the full JPA also?
Yes. Yeah, so the intent, so just to give you guys all forewarnings, we'll be meeting every single executive committee meeting the rest of the year, because the intent, when we modified, we amended the JPA agreement to that where the jurisdictions designated the JPA as the responsible entity to implement the regulations, even though we aren't the liable entity, right? So if we don't do our job, we don't get fined, the jurisdictions get fined. Not that we want that to be the case, but so when we're the designated entity to be responsible for implementing the regulation, at the same time, we amended the responsibilities of the executive committee to basically oversee the month-to-month development of what the programs are, to make sure we're on track, with us reporting back to the full board at every full board meeting. So yes, it will be presented.
So can I ask you, because we do have several new members on the executive committee, that we go over bylaws with the group at some point?
Candy, I'm sorry, I can't hear a word you're saying. You have the softest voice.
I was asking if they would be willing to go over
bylaws
with the group.
Sure, yeah.
As an agenda item at some point.
We can. The new people here know. I provide it to them when they're new, but we can absolutely go over bylaws. It might be boring to the older people, but we can certainly do that. It just outlines the responsibilities of the respective entities, who's responsible for our money, who can make decisions on behalf of the agency, things like that. We can do that. I'll make a note of that. You can actually my agenda, so I can make a note of that. Thank you.
We need that back though. We'll be able to do this. So, yeah. So, there are any other questions on the SB 1383 regulation? All right, hold them for next meeting. Yeah. So,
I do want to point out one thing that Paul and I both attended a webinar today, and it was an incredibly confusing webinar. But something that he and I both gleaned from it is that landfills are not organic material recycling facilities. I mean, we could permit a composting facility at our facility, and that would be an organic material recycling facility. But if a landfill gets a load of mixed waste, which means the whoever brought it to them didn't separate out their food waste from their garbage or anything, and the landfill's owned by a jurisdiction, it's basically the landfill's responsibility to reject that load, because it negatively impacts the jurisdiction, because they're not complying with the requirements, and thus the landfill will then so much organic waste that they would become non-compliant with the regulation. So they stated that at one point, then they went back on it another time, they kind of circled back on it again, so I'm not really sure, so we're still trying to clarify that. But they did at one point say that if a landfill gets a mixed load, the landfill should be rejecting that and sending it to a high diversion facility, in which I'm not aware of any high diversion facilities north of Sacramento in this area. So that's going to be a large hurdle for us to educate the community. I'm just throwing out there right now, it's something new that we hadn't heard before. You know, we can require them to source separate, but I wasn't aware that we were supposed to be rejecting loads altogether. So, just something new to think about.
And I see more and more people just dumping garbage along the road.
Yeah.
Here in Tehama County, you've got so many nice little roads that are quiet.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely the concern.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 100% the concern. That's sort of what I was alluding to, is that you tell them to go to a high diversion facility when county road, blah, 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 is so much closer, you know. I'm not really sure what the answer to that is yet.
Where would be the closest high desert from here?
Their closest high diversion facility is going to be in Sacramento.
Yeah.
It's called a dirty MRF generally. That means that, and that's very, very common in more urban areas. And basically everything goes into one can, you send it to one sorting facility and they sort out all materials. So that's called a dirty MRF because it's really dirty. I mean, and it stinks really bad.
It's actually at an expense to even transport it from where it's coming in now.
So here in Tehama County, I'm not proposing to site a high diversion facility. It would require a lot of land, a lot of labor, and a lot of cost. It would be cheaper for us to get people to just comply at the back at their side than it would be to deal with, you know, their mess when it gets to us in the first place, right? Or that when it ultimately. So, and I don't know of any jurisdiction there is who's proposing to site a high diversion facility.
I think that's more. The less work we do for you and the easier it is in the community, we'll have a cleaner community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, ultimately, that's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just sitting here and wondering who in the world writes this. Yeah.
I'm not sure we've heard anyone yet. It's, yeah. You know, composting is a good thing. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. It's,
no, but
it's the methodology. Which
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Somebody could write a lot of rules, but put them to work. Put them to implement this. You know, they back off in a minute. It should be somewhere in the bill that these guys need to work a month. And then, and see where it goes. And I appreciate both you and Paul doing what you're doing and knowing what you do, but I see the work that this is going to entail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good for either one of you, you know. I mean, the more and more load, stress load, and it gets, anyway.
We've been fortunate the board's been supportive so far. You know, they allowed us to increase our budget to recruit for additional personnel. They funded feasibility studies. You know, that's all your guys' support. We won't be able to do it without you. So at least you're understanding and supporting us in our endeavor.
You know, I think to add to that, if you need us to set up some type of a wall to say, you know, enough is enough. And you know what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
We need to write a letter and say, you know what, we're working, but you can't overburden us. It's nice for somebody to sit behind a desk and push a pencil and write some orders, and that's another one to get it done, so.
Mm-hmm. With CalRecycle, it's a very delicate balance because they hold all our rights.
Yeah.
They hold all of our permitting, they hold all of, you know, they can easily come in and say, you haven't met your diversion goals in 5, 6, 7 years, now we're gonna put you on a compliance order. It's like, you have to really hold them at hand's distance.
Yeah.
Making them mad doesn't get you anywhere with them. I mean, right now they've held up our permit for landfill for 140 days, so.
Mm.
Not that I'm counting.
Okay.
So, that's it for SB 1383. We can go on.
Are you carpet recycling as well?
Yes. Yeah, so. A shorter one. So in 2012, Tehama County with 5 other rural counties were chosen to be part of a pilot carpet recycling program. Upon implementation, we began accepting the carpet and pad during normal operating hours to recycle that. We also charge a reduced tipping fee to encourage more source separation of the carpet when it comes into our facility. Over the years, the carpets, it's fluctuated, it's increased, and then it's decreased, and now we've seen a large increase in 2020 to 80.14 tons. I believe Rich could probably speak to this about the swapping out of the trailers had been an issue in the past, and that may have affected our tonnages. So
in the past, I think if I were to surmise, I think the large increase we've seen this year is largely due to the pandemic, because people are at home or doing a lot of home renovations. And you can even see that in like big box stores like the Home Depot and Lowe's, you know, they've been posting record sales because people are doing their homes, so they've been doing a lot of remodeling. And I think that is what you would, that if I were, I don't know, but that's what I would attribute the large increase to carpet this year. I mean, CARE overall hasn't really improved on theirs. on their service.
We know on our tour that I went with you, I was amazed at the amount of mattresses and carpet that you had out there at the landfill. And that's not usually the scenario in years past, is it?
Mattresses is always the scenario. Carpet is, we're seeing a larger volume than normal.
Yeah, we haven't seen this number since 2015 was the last time we went over 80 tons.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, and then it kind of decreased.
It's a lot of carpet.
It is a lot.
It's a lot of carpet.
Yeah. Unfortunately, all that carpet then isn't ending up in a landfill.
Yeah.
Wasn't the 2015 that carpet wall that was a special surface here?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think a lot of that had to be disposed of.
We did recover a lot of
it. But we were able to recover some, yeah. That was a huge project. Yeah, Pell Recycle, they did that project, so they paid for it. Yeah, fortunately.
About half of it is in phase two.
Yeah. The one thing about carpet, though, as opposed to mattresses, carpet does compact well. It compacts very well, yeah. Yeah. As opposed to mattresses, which is the next item, if there's no other questions on carpet, we can get to mattresses. Mattresses do not compact well because of their springs. They can create air pockets, which can cause landfill fires. So that's one of the main issues, main reasons why the Mattress Recovery and Recycling Act was passed.
Question,
yes,
on the mattresses that you get in after the box springs, where do they go from the landfill?
I believe it's, was it DR3 in Sacramento?
Woodland.
Yeah.
Woodland.
And then they tear apart. It's a labor-intensive process. I believe they work with, is it Goodwill? Or is it St. Paul?
St.
Vincent de Paul.
Yeah.
So because of it's a labor-intensive process, that, you know, you have to do a lot of it by hand, ripping the materials off of, say, the box springs and then recovering that wood. Same thing with the mattresses. They have to be torn apart by hand. I haven't seen that facility. I believe you toured the facility, Rachel.
What's cool about St. Vincent de Paul is they actually employ people who are on parole. So they and they give them jobs, so that it helps them get back into being contributing members of society. And you know, when you're on parole, it's oftentimes difficult to find someone who will employ you. So they have a partnership with different probation or, you know, those types of agencies to employ these people. But when the pandemic ends, maybe we can tour down there as a group of support. But it's pretty amazing where how fast they can flop the mattress onto the spinning table and then just pull the whole thing apart into all the different components in a matter of just a few minutes. And it's just things are flying everywhere, you know. But it is very labor intensive. It's completely done by hand, no machine, except when they bale the materials. So it is pretty cool.
So what kind of cost factor, Rachel, for us to get that stuff down there? I mean, are you being charged, or are you getting money back?
So with carpet and mattresses, they're funded in different ways, but both are funded through a fee at the point of sale. Mm-hmm. So when the public buys a mattress, you pay an $11 per unit recycling fee, and that recycling fee funds the entire recycling program for mattresses in the whole state. A portion of that fee goes back to the facility that collected the discarded mattresses. So for every mattress or box spring that we get at our facility, Green Waste gets about $2. And then that helps reimburse them for the cost of and labor of loading the mattresses into the trailers. And then there's free transportation and trailer rental to get those mattresses to Woodland and there on out. So it's basically breaking even for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Similar to the carpet where they pick it up as well. So the carpet, yeah, the Waste Connection doesn't have to pay for that carpet and everything.
But Waste Connection doesn't get they don't get reimbursed for carpet. They actually recycle carpet at a loss.
Yeah. For mattresses, though, we've stayed about steady there. I'm still waiting for a decrease in mattresses. Haven't seen it yet. So just 188.98 tons. Any other questions? Okay, move on to our Smart Business Alliance. So the Smart Business Alliance, for members that haven't been on the board before, our Smart Business Alliance was established to basically help us achieve compliance with AB 341, which is the mandatory commercial recycling law. There's no local ordinances or anything that require commercial entities to recycle. The only thing is the statewide AB 341, which if we don't meet the compliance with getting businesses to recycle, then that's where, like Rachel mentioned before, the fines would be placed on the jurisdictions that don't meet that. And in some cases, we've seen where jurisdictions were part of a joint powers authority and they picked out one jurisdiction. You know, we try to cover all commercial entities throughout the county. Predominantly, Red Bluff and Corning are where our apartment complexes are. Those are some of the most difficult to get. And then other entities. But like your large grocery stores, a lot of that recycling is standard practice for them. The SBA has grown over the years. We now have, I believe it was 6,970 members, I believe now. There's various incentives to joining the Smart Business Alliance. We'll provide them with recycling bins at no cost, so they don't need to purchase anything extra to separate their recyclables. If they have service with Green Waste of Tehama, they will get 3 months of free recycling service. Unfortunately, Waste Management doesn't provide that for the city of Corning. So when we're working with businesses in the city of Corning, we usually adjust their service so they don't see a large increase in the cost for their waste disposal. And then work with them to make sure that that side is right. Then, like I said, the rest of the county, they get the free service for recycling for 3 months, and that helps to make an easier transition to train their employees, to train everybody on how to recycle, and then they almost always see a cost savings by reducing their trash and incorporating the recycling. Even though they have to pay for recycling, there's almost always a cost savings involved with that. We also advertise the Smart Business Alliance with the Chamber of Commerce, both in Corning and in Red Bluff, and promote them through you know, our Facebook page, our website. It's on there, all the members. And then just recently, I've been working with a sustainability consultant that's also a teacher at CSU Chico. And she has a class this year, this semester, that's going to be focusing on helping us achieve better outreach to businesses. So the students are going to be coming up with, they're going to be focusing on various industries and putting forth proposals to put, you know, towards that, you know, like a grocery store or a manufacturer, something like that. They also are going to help us with our recycling market development zone on a separate class. But that was one of the one of the newest things with the SBA that we've
done. Can you ask what the gold levels and platinum levels and stuff are?
Oh, yes. So the various levels are based on their waste reduction and basically environmentally friendly practices. So if you replace your chemical cleaners with non-toxic alternatives, that gets you some points, and then you can get up from bronze to gold, and then you know, you replace your non-recycled paper with recycled content paper, you replace styrofoam with reusable cups, those things would then get you more points. And if you achieve, I think it's like 13 or something out of the 15, you can get the platinum level, right?
It's, I haven't done it in so long.
Yeah, it's been a
while. Yeah. Like that, yeah.
So there's, well, some of those, some businesses won't implement that. We do have a lot of the base level businesses, and that's mainly due to just having them recycling is a great achievement. You know, but we don't want to push too much on that.
This is an incredible list.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember when you first got started on it. I think I was actually one of the first businesses that did it.
Oh, really?
The Council Mortgage, like way, way back.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, AB 341 kind of replaces the old AB 9.
That's
it. Actually, it's a built on.
I was used to in those days.
It built on.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a built on. So it's progressive. So AB 939 was the groundbreaking one, and then they passed 341, and then 1826. So each one of those are built on to 8939 and SB 1383 additionally. So 8939 is still there. They just make it more and more and more robust, essentially. Yeah.
Thanks to the state, huh?
Good job on getting new people.
Yeah, we contact 15 businesses per month. We try to contact 15 businesses per month when we're able to. We'd like to visit them in person because it's much easier to get a business to sign up with the program, talking to them in person and showing them all that, than talking to them over the phone or emailing them, that sort of stuff. And it has risen from, the compliance rate, which isn't, so that's more than just the Smart Business Alliance partners. Not everybody that's a commercial entity that recycles is in the SBA, but you can see that our compliance rate has risen from 42.8% to just over 69% at the close of last year.
That's great.
We're working on it. There's one of the things that CalRecycle does focus on is mandatory commercial recycling when they contact us about our diversion goals and stuff. Excellent. And I think the next one is monthly update, which is Rachel.
Okay. So I have my monthly update in the agenda like I always do. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Rachel, what I know about you, I'm very new on the board, is that you've done an exceptionally good job out there.
Oh, thank you.
Just get some running boards on that truck, please, if you want me to ride again.
I did get a quote for them, actually.
Yeah, because she never wants to see me get in her truck the way I got in last time. And no one needs to see that.
I've had a heck of a time getting in it, and I had a hard time getting out of it.
It's very tall.
It is.
When you park it into the curb, so you just pop right up and get in.
I know.
That's a trick.
It is my trick. I'm not ashamed. I've never been ashamed of my trick.
So you mentioned tonight that in this recycling program that waste management in the Corning area does not want to do it free. Is that correct?
They have not agreed to offering free service for an incentive with that, unfortunately.
Yeah, sounds like waste management. So
that's for 3 months, though, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't have to be for 3 months. 3 months is a good, frankly, for some businesses, it's more than they need. But 3 months is a good time frame to analyze their trash. If there's hiccups, and different things like that, usually able to work out all of the kinks, whether it's employees not doing the right thing, or maybe they're, sometimes the waste hauler does have issues and they don't pick it up right because for whatever reason. So
sure.
That 3 months, ample time to get everybody on board. Very successful.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I have a question, Rachel. We talked a little about this today. I was out there at the landfill. I live in Corning. I live in a mobile park, which at one time was a senior park. And I had went out and talked to waste management about getting a recycle bin, yard waste, so that we could roll out to the street and pick it up. Because we're considered commercial, they don't allow that. So my question is, for the landowner or the owner of the park, we're having to put green waste into trash, which is really illegal. So is there any stipulations for a property owner such in that capacity that is required by law to have a recyclable green waste container for the park people?
When 1383 takes effect, they will be required to.
Yes.
So
when will that go into effect?
For Corning, it will be January 1st, 2027.
2027.
And they will have.
Because now, when I trim my brushes, bushes, and what have you, leaves, what have you, waste management just put it in a black bag, take it down, throw it in the trash. Well, that's still not right.
Yeah.
I have no way to get rid of it otherwise. So.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the case for all commercial entities in the. Waste Connections, Green Waste of Tehama service area as well. And I've had a few commercial entities contact me about that. So I know you were working with Waste Connections on that as well. But I think, it'll take that law actually being in effect for them to move.
I've been there 13 years, and I've been trying to get a green waste bin ever since.
Yeah.
The problem with, so there is two different things. If it were just like a small rollout cart, I guess the first problem is that green waste is incredibly expensive for haulers to get rid of because we charge almost as much as we charge garbage, and it all comes to us, right? So they would prefer that you just, and then on top of that, they're charging the customer a reduced rate. So it's like they're banking on you putting it in the garbage. That's how they make their money. They don't really make their money on the recycling or the green waste portion of it. They're kind of just breaking even. So the second portion is for commercial entities. If you put a dumpster out there for just green waste, they have to create a whole nother route with a whole nother truck just to service those dumpsters. And there just aren't that many dumpsters. So there's not enough dumpsters to pay for the route itself. So in the future, it's going to have to change because there's no, they'll have to comply, but they're resistant to change right now because sort of how everyone is, like, well, we haven't done it so long. That's not how we always did it. We don't want to change sort of mentality.
Yeah. You know, recycling times have changed through the years, I believe. I mean, cardboard used to be a huge commodity.
Yes.
Not anymore.
No. Unfortunately. So are there any other questions for the monthly update?
I do have a question, but I probably should have asked it during public comment. Can you, or maybe the already are, these meetings on the county calendar?
They are.
ICM
2?
On ICM 2 list of meetings?
The meeting list where you'll see all the like the TCTC or the BOS. Yes, that's where our agendas are posted.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, we do everything in ICM 2. All of our
calendar, though.
I'm not familiar with the calendar. Yeah, I'll have to look that one up.
I just found out a really neat
the county
way of getting information. John has it fed into his phone.
Okay.
You know, and I didn't even know you could do that. I've been there for 6 years.
Oh, sure.
They're going to send it up for me, so that's why.
Is it Brent? Is Brent sending that?
Exactly, yeah.
I'll talk to him.
Yeah, and that's voted on every October, the next meeting list. But there's another master list of meetings as well. But I'm not familiar with that.
I know what you're talking about. There's the list where it has Board of Supervisors list on there.
Like, yeah, and that's where you'll see the agendas posted and then the audio for the previous meetings, minutes.
I'll talk to Brent. Can I see my agenda?
It might already be there. I'm just asking everybody in every meeting now that I found out that it can change your phone.
Yeah, I would think if we're if ours are generated in IQM 2 and everything, I think it would be included on there if they include other, Yeah, it's not always the case sometimes. So.
I know you probably know that Sue Ampey moved from the administration to county council, and now she's in HR.
Oh, okay.
And she's the one that started filling that in. We already had the calendar, but she started filling it in. Like, she was doing input, so I don't know if it's on.
It might be an Outlook calendar.
You know, on my phone, because I hooked up with a county calendar, all your reports are already on there, the dates.
Are they?
Yeah, we got coming up.
Well, then maybe it's already on there.
Okay.
The supervisors in red love, and then you give me the printout.
Yeah.
I just had them set up my phone with our calendar in the county, and so I got all these dots all over, so it's really working out pretty good.
And the other thing I can tell you is you don't have to provide me a hard copy anymore.
Okay.
Because I look at it online anyway. I don't even look at the hard copy. It's just a waste of paper.
So just bring you one for the meeting itself.
Yeah, I do like it here because it's easier for me to.
Of course.
Do it this way.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll make a note.
Yep.
Thanks.
So that's great because that's less the less we have to print at the time. Excellent. So the only remaining item is the outreach update. If you guys would like to hear me read that off to you. It's up to you. Yeah. All right.
We can read it.
Might as well.
Go.
So,
it's not very long.
Yeah, unfortunately, it isn't very long because, besides being the winter time, COVID has really reduced the outreach that our agency has been able to do. But monthly, Rachel and I contribute waste reduction, recycling, and hazardous waste disposal information to the monthly Lake California POA newsletter, the Rancho Tehama newsletter. We also produce and distribute the Tehama County 4Rs e-news blast and quarterly distribute the Educators Waste Awareness e-newsletter. I had attended the Tehama Together's Community Food Alliance Zoom meeting on January 11th to provide an update on our activities at the landfill and our upcoming SB 1383 regulations. The hope is that working with the CFA, we'll be able to achieve the edible food recovery goals
So connecting those generators with the food recovery organizations. We held a passenger tire collection event on Saturday, January 9th, from 8 a.m. until noon at the landfill. And we also allowed residents to go to the closed Los Molinos transfer station. Residents also could drop off at the Manton and Rancho Tehama transfer stations during that event. We collected a total of 1,152 passenger tires. We are currently holding our agricultural tire collection event for the entire month of February, where residents can make an appointment by calling our agency at 528-1103. And they can make an appointment to drop off up to 6 tires, agricultural tractor tires, per property at the landfill for free. Then the total tires that we collect this month will be reported at the next meeting if possible. We have a household hazardous waste collection event held from 8 a.m. until noon on this Saturday, February 6th, at the landfill. We also have an event on February 20th down here in Corning at Corning Disposal. Additionally, the agency was notified last year that Waste Tire Products would no longer be able to hold their electronic waste collection events, which one of them occurred right across the street. They ran into some issues and they haven't been able to restart that program. So until there's another program available, all electronic waste is accepted for free at the landfill. So the only thing is that, you know, residents down in Corning, you know, don't have that ease of access like they used to. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mike. Good job.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Anybody have anything else? Such a nice job.
No, I don't. Dinner.
That sounds good.
Meeting's adjourned at 6:27.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Nice meeting you, James.
It's good to see you with the can.
Yeah,
over the mask.
Well, there we can.
Chris, I'll need you to sign the minutes.
Is there a restroom?
Yes, so go up that and then come right at that first door.
But you're getting your camera day out there in your office, didn't you?
Yes, exactly. Nice meeting you, Karen.
Nice meeting you.
I think I may have met you one other time when you were
sitting
or something.
Thank you.
They are going to take you home?
Well, he's been forgotten.
See you tomorrow. No, he went to the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
I hope so.
Huh?
I said, I hope so.
Yes.